Texas First and Ten. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Bob Evans and Blue Emu. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
First and Ten, ready to get underway. Carla Dawson next to me, Ron Culver behind the glass. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning.
Well, that was not super peppy. He must not be excited to be seeing us.
Well, he's playing some peppy music.
I'm very excited to see you guys. What are you talking about?
Just had to hear it.
Ron's been up a long time. He starts his day very early, but he's just a bundle of sunshine each day when we come in and see him. Exciting weekend ahead. This is the show about all things football. And in college football, we've been waiting for some good matchups. I mean, there have been a couple, but nothing like this weekend. It feels like the last few weekends, we've just had a whole bunch of cupcake games, everybody playing their weakest opponents. But this weekend, there are at least two matchups I'm very excited about.
We've got some good ones. Number 7, Notre Dame. Number 3, Georgia at Georgia, which is going to be great. Then you got Auburn taking on A&M, Oklahoma State with University of Texas, time for some Big 12 play, and Michigan at Wisconsin, which I really like that one.
All right.
This is going to be a truth serum game.
It's a truth serum game, and Harbaugh's got a lot on the line with that game. Later on, we're going to get a chance to visit with Hudson Mason. He's a former quarterback for the Georgia Bulldogs, and we can ask him about the big matchup, the Bulldogs against Notre Dame, and how he views the SEC in its entirety. He's a guy who really follows the SEC closely, so we'll look deeply into the SEC with him. Also fun that we get to do broadcasts on Mondays and Thursdays in the fall because there's always a game coming, and there is a big Thursday night game. Well, not so big.
It just became big. Thank you, Jalen Ramsey.
It's not a marquee matchup, but intriguing what the Jaguars are going to do with Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, it is if you're an AFC South fan.
Yeah.
For sure. But now it's made everybody want to watch because it will be curious. Jalen Ramsey will play tonight, says Doug Marrone, but it will be curious to see, is he going to play his regular snap count? I mean, what is this going to be? So I'm anxious. There's been at least 6 teams interested in him, wanting to know if they pick him up, can he play on Sunday, which, of course, is a big no. But, it's going to be – I'm going to be curious to see where he lands. Doug Marrone says it's all worked out. Let's see tonight.
Well, let's see. When we come back, we're going to take a look at, did the Giants make the right decision in benching Eli Manning? That and more when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is First and Ten on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Bob Evans and Blue Emu. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
So we did our show Monday night and started to speculate whether Eli Manning would get another start. Today we learn it will be Daniel Jones starting for the Giants. How much of a surprise was it to you?
None. This is the Giants.
Yeah.
I mean, what I don't like are the optics, to be perfectly honest. Pat Shurmur's the fall guy. I'm just going to go right there and say it. I'm going to look back at 2017. Ben McAdoo benches Eli Manning, ruining his consecutive game streak. And what happens to him?
Well, there were cries of injustice. People were really upset about it.
He lost his job.
Sure.
I mean, done. And so, but I really think Ben McAdoo was onto something. And I think that we need to look at that because what he saw was a guy in the sunset of his career, not over, but in the sunset of his career, who with weapons around him could still be a Manning. I mean, he is a Manning through and through, class personified as on and off the field. But instead, the Giants organization, which we have seen to be pretty darn disastrous, had nothing around him. So when Ben McAdoo was fired, so they replaced several of the coaches, several of the front office, and guess what? It's the same business 2.0 under Pat Shurmur. So they didn't build, they didn't give anything around Eli for support. I mean, Golden Tate was suspended. I mean, there's no receivers. They've got Saquon Barkley.
And Sterling Shepard had injury issues. They really are weak at the receiver position. And that will be true under Daniel Jones. I wish him luck. I mean, that's a tough deal. Going back to that offseason, There were whispers that the Giants would trade Eli to the Jaguars and reunite him with Tom Coughlin.
In this offseason.
Yeah. In the offseason. And that probably would have been a better outcome, certainly for Eli. Anyway, obviously that didn't work. Eli Manning now playing the role of a good teammate was pretty classy about being demoted.
He was very classy about it. And I love his perspective, too. I'm not dying.
Right.
I mean, he's like, yeah, this is what I signed up for. This is what you signed up for. I mean, it's a competitive sport. It's next man up, always. I think, you know, he handled it beautifully. And I wish that the Giants had handled him beautifully because, that you know, I think their intention is really good. They want Manning to end his career in a Giants uniform.
Yep.
I mean, he's a two-time Super Bowl winner, two-time Super Bowl MVP, four-time Pro Bowler. This guy is not garbage. He is on the sunset of his career for sure. And he, so far, let's be clear, has had a very decent season in these first two games with nothing to work with. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, it's always
Zippo.
The caveat. Given what he had to work with, he's been okay.
Yes, and I really think the Giants wronged him. They should have, if they really think that highly of Eli, and I do believe they do, they should have given him the freedom to sign elsewhere. They know that they decided they want to sell their talent. They, you know, signed OBJ to a $90 million deal, trade him a year later, and they want to rebuild with a younger roster. That's great. But that is exactly when they should have cut ties with Eli, respected him, and given him the freedom to be somewhere that would be best with his skill set.
Fair enough. One really interesting development, when you look across the league and you think about the quarterbacks just a month ago that we envisioned starting for their teams, about 25% of them are not starting.
So just, did you see Ron Culver just ran out? He's auditioning for
Don't
Jets.
Sell out Culver, our show producer back there. He's a little short.
He could do it. No, he's strong.
He's got it. But
I have faith in Ron.
I mean, you think about it, obviously Andrew Luck, that's a retirement. But when you go down Drew Brees, Nick Foles, Ben Roethlisberger's, well, those guys are gone. Sam Darnold with mononucleosis, he'll be back.
His backup, Trevor Siemian, now out with an injury.
Done.
Injury.
Eli Manning, benched. Cam Newton, injury. You tallied all up, 8 quarterbacks. 4 weeks ago, 8 quarterbacks you thought would be playing are not playing. That's 25% of the league. That's not great for the NFL.
No, that is not great for the NFL. And, you know, you've got people like, well, who's the Jet safety that's doing the complaining right now?
Adams.
You know, he's saying, I'm not playing touch football. Well, you think that the league is going to take a look at what's going down with these signal callers.
Right.
And, like you said, a quarter of the league. And they're going to lighten the penalties. And, I mean, you can't even look at Tom Brady or breathe near him. It's kind of the LeBron James situation. If you breathe near them, whoop, you're teed up.
Yeah, there's really not much more you can do from a rules standpoint to protect these guys. And notably, several of these names we just went through weren't injured by hard contact. Roethlisberger, of course, a non-contact injury. Even Drew Brees was a little bit of a fluke, right?
And right.
It wasn't like he was hit unnecessarily.
No, it was, you know, Aaron Donald just, you know, got a piece of his hand, not in any sort of egregious way.
But what it has done is, of course, it's stressed the starting quarterback position, but it's also stressed the backup position. Well, you get Paxton Lynch signing with the Steelers, and he will back up Mason, the guy of 1,000 chances. I mean, if you're a first-round draft pick at some point as a quarterback, you do get many more chances even if you fail at your first destination. So Paxton Lynch goes with the Steelers, and there are cries all over the country for the return of Colin Kaepernick.
Do not get me started.
What? Come on, the league is short of quarterbacks. Colin Kaepernick took his team to the Super Bowl.
Year one.
He's not the answer.
And that, you know, this is, okay, this is why.
Oh, I'm getting her started.
You're getting me going again.
Good.
This is not good. But this is exactly why Colin Kaepernick does not and should not have a job in the NFL.
Yes.
What people forget is, number one, it's his play that he's not anywhere, okay? He was 11-24 in his last 3 seasons with the 49ers.
Mm.
And I have no issue with him taking the knee. That's what everyone's trying to point it to. The last visual of Colin Kaepernick on an active NFL roster was sitting on the bench, hauling in $13 million a year.
Yeah.
I'm not weeping for the dude. Okay. So that's one thing, is his play. I don't think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. He could be a backup, and I'll tell you why that's not going to work right now.
I will just add, there are a lot of poor playing backups. I mean, he probably meets the quality level of a backup quarterback, Maybe.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
I will give him that he could be a backup.
But
the backups in the NFL, even the third strings, they aren't polarizing, and I'll explain a little bit of that. And they did not sue the league. You're the CEO of Gal Media here.
Yes. Right?
So you've got this great talk show host, and he really wants a job, but he just sued you. He just attempted to sue you, and you settled with him. Are you going to bring him in?
No, I just as soon never see him again. You're right. I mean, that is a problem.
Why are people not even talking about that?
Right.
I mean, his boss is Roger Goodell and the 32 owners. Those would be his bosses. Those would be the people who gave him a paycheck.
Right.
He filed a grievance against them, tried to sue them, and settled.
Not a good job application.
Not a good job application. And then I'm just going to bring back one of his polarizing actions that I'm not okay with. It's things like this. He gets a tryout with the Baltimore Ravens a couple of years ago.
They bring him in.
They decided not to sign him. They also brought him into Seattle, and Pete Carroll was like, oh, yeah, he should be a starting quarterback, but we don't want him. Yeah, okay, whatever. What does he do? He doesn't get, you know, asked back to Baltimore. Thanks, but no thanks. And his girlfriend, Nessa Diab, who is a big internet influencer, she posts a picture of Ray Lewis having Baltimore Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti in a stranglehold, with like the Django Unchained kind of promo. And I'm like, oh my gosh, who is going to bring this on? This is polarizing. He shows up to his press conference after a win against the Miami Dolphins when he was a 49er in a Fidel Castro t-shirt. I mean, these are things that, you know what, people, you got to talk about these. It's not, he is not being blackballed for kneeling for the anthem. Here we go.
All right. When we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Hudson Mason. He's the former Georgia Bulldogs quarterback, and the Bulldogs have a big matchup this weekend against Notre Dame. It'll be Hudson Mason joining us next here on SB Nation Radio. All right, joining us now on First and 10 SB Nation Radio is Hudson Mason, former quarterback for the Georgia Bulldogs. Hudson, welcome onto the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, David, Carla, how you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Well, we're doing great, and we're excited about the matchup this weekend, Georgia-Notre Dame. I will say maybe based on recent history, maybe based on a great Georgia team, everybody seems to feel like Georgia is going to have the upper hand in this one.
Yeah, I think Vegas is on point right now. They've got it at a 14-point spread. I actually think it ends up being kind of a 38-24 ball game, and Georgia pulls away late for a couple reasons, but mainly because I think Georgia is really, really good at running the ball, and Notre Dame is not very good at stopping the run. You look at the past two games that Notre Dame has played against Louisville and New Mexico State. They've given up over 200 yards per game on the ground. And then last week against New Mexico State, they gave up explosive runs. They gave up a 30-yard touchdown and then a 40-yard touchdown. And, you know, they're going to see one of the best, if not the best, offensive line in the country for Georgia, and then one of the best running backs in DeAndre Swift. And so I think Notre Dame, to give themselves a chance at winning this game, I don't want to say they have to stop the run because that's an overused and inflated term, but somehow they got to figure out a way to slow it down. I saw a tweet this week, and I thought it was really, really telling about the matchup between Georgia's O-line and Notre Dame's D-line, and it said that the average weight for the Notre Dame defensive lineman was 275 pounds, and the average weight for Georgia's offensive lineman is 325 pounds. So
wow.
That's a huge weight. Yeah, huge weight disparity, and I think Georgia is going to just lean on those guys, push those guys around, and so – there's a lot of different factors. I think Ian Book has to play well and take some chances outside. And Georgia doesn't have a lot of production at the receiver position. So if they can slow down this run and force Jake Fromm to throw the ball more than he's comfortable with, I think that gives him a chance. But ultimately, I think Georgia wins and wins pretty handily.
Is DeAndre Swift the best running back at Georgia since Herschel Walker?
Oh, man, you get me in trouble if I said that based on some of the guys that I played with, like Todd Gurley, Nick Chubb, Sony Michel. I don't think he's there yet, no. I think, obviously, if he puts together another strong campaign this year, he could make a strong argument for it. But there's a lot of old-school traditionalist Georgia fans that think that nobody will be better ever than Herschel Walker. And you know, I saw Todd Gurley and Nick Chubb up close, and man, Georgia's had a long lineage of really, really good running backs. You go back to Craig Lumpkin and Danny Ware, and some of the guys that I play with that I just mentioned. I mean, they've done a really, really good job of just recruiting, and I've always had that 1-2 punch, but, you know, I didn't get to see Herschel up close, but I got to see Todd Gurley and Nick Chubb, and man, those guys were special.
Hudson, so Ian Book is 5-0 on the road in his Notre Dame career so far. We've seen Jake Fromm develop beautifully from freshman year on. Talk about what Fromm needs to do to contain this Notre Dame offense led by Ian Book, and how do you think Ian Book is going to do on the road with Georgia?
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned that stat about Ian Book because that's kind of the anomaly. I mean, Notre Dame has not played well against ranked teams. I think they've lost 18 of 19 games dating back to 1999 versus top five teams. And obviously fresh in our minds are last year against Clemson when they got blown out, and then 2013 against Alabama. So I think the pressure is around Notre Dame. If they lose this game, whether it's small or large, I think it eliminates them from the college football playoff because they don't have a conference championship game. So there's a lot hinging on Notre Dame. And I think there's a bit of pressure around them to perform in these national prominence game where everybody is watching. So, Ian Book has played well, I think, ever since Notre Dame made the switch last year to him at the quarterback. They've become a lot more explosive. He can run the ball and he can throw. He's got some good receivers out wide. They've just struggled to run the ball. So I think as far as the quarterback position, like I said, Ian's going to have to land some shots. And this Georgia secondary is not what it was last year when they had an All-American corner in DeAndre Baker. Tyson Campbell, who's been starting for him for a while, might be out. They've just got some guys that are pretty green on the outside, younger guys. And I think if Ian can make some big shots down the field, if it has some success running the football, and if Georgia on the other side turns the ball over one or two times, that could be a recipe for Notre Dame being in this game, if not winning it late. So I think Jay Fromm doesn't make mistakes. I mean, his touchdown-interception ratio is spectacular. And the teams that force him to throw the ball more than 30 times a game usually win the game. Georgia's got an interesting stat out there that when they throw the ball more than 30 times, their win-loss percentage drops off significantly. So if they can force Fromm into some uncharacteristic mistakes, and force Georgia to throw the ball, usually that means that's in favor of the other team.
We're talking to Hudson Mason. He was a quarterback for the Georgia Bulldogs, and I'd love to ask you about some of the other SEC quarterbacks. I mean, Joe Burrow's is impressed, right? Watched him against Texas and just was so impressed by what he was doing in his command of the offense. Is he a guy who can take LSU to the championship?
Yeah, I absolutely believe he can. I mean, I've said a couple times now, it's down in the bayou right now. It's the story of the Joes, not only Joe Burrow, but Joe Brady, this new offensive coordinator that they brought in from the Saints, and he's made a world of difference. And I heard rumors in the offseason, man, this guy Joe Brady, he's 28 years old. He's the Sean McVay of college football. And, you know, you kind of roll your eyes because everybody thinks they're Sean McVay now. But this guy has made a huge imprint, not only for this offense, but for Joe Burrow. And Joe Burrow, people forget, this kid came last year from Ohio State and started immediately. And he had only been on campus like 2 months. I mean, he got there in the summertime, and then, bam, he became the starter. And I thought what he did last year was impressive. Given that he had, you know, just gotten to campus and was learning a new system. And then you see another step, or it looks like they're taking another step forward this year. And I know LSU fans are excited. I think they're the most legit team that we've seen the past decade for LSU. And I think they're a legit team in the sense that this is a team that could beat Alabama. Now, as we sit here today, barring no major injuries, but Alabama has lost a lot of playmakers. They're playing more freshmen than they've ever played at important position groups. And so I think when you look at the explosiveness of this LSU offense and then what they did on the road against Texas, I thought it was a shame they weren't ranked number two last week in the AP poll ahead of Georgia and Alabama based on that impressive win on the road at Texas.
So you mentioned Alabama, Hudson, and of course we can't talk SEC without mentioning Alabama. Do you think I thought last year there were some chinks in the armor with Alabama, and obviously towards the end with Tua's injuries and how he played, that was evident, and all the way to the national championship game. Georgia has played Alabama well the last couple of years. Do you think this could be the year, and as you mentioned, a lot of key injuries for Alabama that they're not used to. Is this going to be the year for Georgia, and could this be the year for Georgia?
This is the year, but I want to hear I want to hear from Hudson.
I hope so.
I'm kind of one of those guys that says until I see it, prove it to me until I see it. And I tell you what, Georgia, they've led 59 out of 60 minutes the past two times they've led against Alabama. I mean, that stat in general is just mind-boggling, how you could lead 99.9% of the game in both times, and you end up losing. And so I think what's different about this season is, and it's still early, but again, Alabama, they feel a bit more vulnerable this year because of the injuries. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Nick Saban even came out and said that. And so, obviously, offensively, their three receivers are just – it's unfair that the guys who Tua gets to throw to. I mean, they have more depth. They got three guys that will play in the first round, and nobody even talks about Ruggs, and he runs a 4.2 because he's overshadowed by some of these other great receivers. I think where they've got young guys playing is on the defensive side of the ball. So it'll be interesting to see if who Alabama is as the season progresses, and as these freshmen get more and more reps, do they get better, or does this team stay vulnerable? Alabama hasn't played anybody right now, and so we'll see. You know, who knows? Maybe the first time they get challenged is LSU. Maybe it's sooner than that. But Georgia's a good team, and I think this era, the most complete team, and so Alabama should be, I don't want to say they should be worried right now because they're not focused on it, but you know, if Georgia stays healthy, giving the injuries to key positions at Alabama, I do think this could set up to be a very, very intriguing storyline if they both meet in Atlanta.
Okay, not going to lie, Hudson, would love to see the student take down the teacher. Kirby Smart taking down Nick Saban would be pretty nice, not going to lie.
Well, remember, I mean, there hasn't been an assistant coach, to, as you mentioned, to ever beat Alabama. And, you know, I think Nick is 20-something and 0 versus former assistants. And if anybody's going to do it, I think we all think it's going to be Kirby Smart to get it done. So it'll be interesting to see. And you know what? It's funny. We do this with the Patriots. You know, we do this with Alabama. It's like every year we think, oh, this is the year we're going to catch them sleeping. You know, this is going to be the year where, you know, because this guy's out or that guy's out, that they're finally going to slip and trip up, and they don't. So that's why I kind of go back to, you know, until I see it happen, I'm a bit skeptical, just because Nick Saban is just he's just so good at having depth and recruiting and coaching new kids up, and does a tremendous job there. So it'll be interesting to see.
He's Hudson Mason. Hudson, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate your insights here on First and Ten, SB Nation Radio.
All right. Good. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
This is First and Ten on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Bob Evans and Blue Emu. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and we do have a big game tonight. The Titans and the Jaguars, Thursday Night Football. I say big game, this is not a marquee matchup. However, Jalen Ramsey's making noise. Gardner Minshew making noise for the Jaguars. Different kind of noise. So Minshew, in his first outing against the Texans, I thought did quite well. I mean, he was a guy who had really never played in the NFL, coming out of Washington State. He got into a rhythm. You could just feel the groove that he hit. I was impressed.
No, I was impressed as well. I mean, he had a
and I'm not talking about the mustache as you are. I'm talking about his play on the field.
Yeah, we won't get into his pregame ritual, but, you know, that's a whole nother thing. But, no, it was very impressive. That's why the two-point conversion call by Doug Marrone to end the game for Jacksonville was not surprising. The fact that he ran it instead of going with a quarterback who was hot was what was shocking. And the Texans ended up with a goal line stand and won the game 13-12. But, no, Gardner Minshew, I am happy if I'm Doug Marrone. Like, how did that just happen?
Well, he's the biggest thing to watch tonight.
Yes, he
right?
is. Well,
Jalen Ramsey. So here's the deal. Jalen Ramsey, everybody knows he's on the...
Fight night. Bring it on.
Yes.
Bring it on.
Well, he's on the cusp of getting traded. He and Doug Marrone evidently don't get along well. They're going to trade him.
No, Doug Marrone says everything is fine, David. Do you not know that?
Then why
everything
trade him?
Totally
I mean,
fine.
Give me a break. But here we go. If you were running the Jaguars... would you play Jalen Ramsey tonight? Because you're presumably on the cusp of getting, say, two first-round draft picks in return for Jalen. He's going to deliver a haul. I mean, if Laremy Tunsil, a left tackle, premier position, cornerback, Jalen Ramsey, premier position, but Tunsil was worth two first-rounders, Ramsey in the same neighborhood, right?
And a second.
Okay, so the Jaguars are on the cusp of a nice draft bounty. Playing him tonight comes with some risk.
Yes, it always comes. Yes, that's right. But also not playing him comes with some risk because you're going to, if he doesn't get traded, I mean, what Jacksonville holds those cards.
Yeah.
They could say, I'm not going to trade. No one's willing to give us two first rounders. I don't. So you want to keep your guy somewhat happy. And Jalen Ramsey has said when he spoke, I'm going to play Thursday night. I want to play. So he's all in. He wants to be showcased. I mean, his stock may even just go up tonight because that's how good of a player he is. I do think it's interesting to note, and it gives me a little bit of cause to pause, of what has been going on in Jacksonville the last couple years. Because, A, they've had one of the most vaunted defenses in the NFL. Just unbelievable. And under Blake Bortles, which God knows how they had a winning record under him at one point, they extended him. They didn't need to extend him to a 3-year, $54 million contract. And what happens? He does what Blake Bortles does, stinks it up the next year. You know, he's gone. Credit them for bringing in a Nick Foles. But I think Jacksonville has lost their brand new leader in week one in Nick Foles. Can't do anything about an injury. But now they're losing their best player in week two. So the 0-2 start has been really brutal for Jacksonville. And I don't know. I question what's going on in that organization a little bit, that they have a lot of talent, but they can't seem to, A, get the winning record that they want, and B, keep a lot of their stars happy.
Well, the disconnect for me is
star.
If you – look, nobody has perfect vision on what's taking place here, but if you thought you were really in the hunt, if you think – if you're a Jaguars, Doug Marrone, and you think you've got a real shot this season, then, yeah, you play Jalen Ramsey tonight because you need every win you can get. You're 0-2. You've got to win.
And it's a division rival that you're going against.
If you're playing for the future, if you've recognized this is not your year, you're off to 0-2 and your starting quarterback is injured and Gardner Minshew is a ceiling on him, if you conclude that, well, then don't play Jalen. Trade him for draft capital. Don't risk him. I think they felt pretty good about Gardner Minshew, and frankly, they could be 1-1. I mean, they were a quarter of an inch away from beating the Texans, and the Texans are the division rival. They will play them again. Clearly, they can play them in a very competitive fashion.
Here's another reason they may not they feel okay playing Jalen Ramsey tonight. Take a look at the Tennessee side of the ball. Do you know that no Tennessee wide receiver has caught a touchdown pass in the first two games?
Ouch.
Zero. So maybe there's not a lot for Jalen Ramsey to do. Now, they had O-lineman David Quisenberry catch a touchdown pass. That was super cool. He was here in Houston with the Texans for a couple years. Cancer survivor, amazing story. But not a single wide receiver for the Titans.
Listen, the formula tonight. The formula, it's Mariota to Quisenberry. That's it. Look for that matchup. Send Quisenberry deep.
That's the new duo in the
Do
NFL.
What you gotta do.
Forget Tom Brady and AB. We've got Mariota and Quisenberry.
I love that duo. All right, but something you said that's sort of intriguing is you said, well, in this...
Sort of intriguing?
Okay, wildly intriguing.
Thank you.
Over the top fascinating.
All right.
I can tell you when you say, in this Jaguars-Ramsey struggle, the Jaguars hold all the cards. And on the one hand, yes, they don't have to trade Jalen Ramsey. But we're now living in an era in the NFL where it seems that the players have a whole lot more power and ability to exert their will than they did previously. Ramsey wants out. He's gone. He will be gone. Minka Fitzpatrick from the Dolphins wanted out. He's gone. Antonio Brown, the man of whom we will never speak again,
right. He
has obviously forced his hands all over the place. But let's go back to Minka Fitzpatrick. He said he wanted out of the Dolphins. They've traded him. I thought it was surprising that he could just pull that off. And that is, he's done. The Dolphins did nothing wrong other than lose. I mean, they paid him. They honored him. They coached him. I mean, he didn't like the way Brian Flores was using him. But Brian Flores is not an illegitimate guy. I mean, he's...
No, he's a former Patriots defensive coordinator.
Anyway, Fitzpatrick works his way out. The other surprising thing about Fitzpatrick's departure from Miami to me is that he went to the Steelers. The Steelers, in my mind, are sellers, not buyers. I think the Steelers are done this year. When you look at the talent drain that's happened, of course, Big Ben, Bell, and Brown, Ryan Shazier on the defensive side, I don't think the Steelers are going anywhere this year. I don't think Mason Rudolph is the guy. I think their season's over. And so to trade their first-round pick, effectively, for Minka Fitzpatrick really doesn't make sense to me. That first-round pick, I think it's going to be a top 12 pick based on how the Steelers are going to perform this year.
Well, I think you said exactly the right thing. I think they're not throwing in the towel.
Mm.
I think that, you know, Mike Tomlin is fighting for his job. He shouldn't be with a record of 128-68-1, but he is.
Yep.
And he's a defensive guy. That's his thing.
Yep.
So shoring up a defense that's minus a Ryan Shazier, I understand the Minka Fitzpatrick deal and the availability of him, a first rounder, you know, from the 2018 draft. I think that they also, this says to me, they feel pretty good about Mason Rudolph, you know, at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's interesting. They are definitely not, to me, this move says, we're not calling this in. Mm. They feel, they really like Juju Smith-Schuster. I think he could be a number one. He's not playing like a number one in the first 2 weeks. But maybe that's because of Ben Roethlisberger and this injury. So I think there's still time to tell. I love that they're not throwing it in.
Interesting. I wanted Minka Fitzpatrick for the Dallas Cowboys. I feel like the Cowboys have all the pieces.
Greedy.
When you stare at their team, the weak spot that jumps out is the safety position. Jeff Heath has sort of shown you what he can be and is pretty mediocre. Xavier Woods, your other safety, is a guy who's shown some flashes. He's still young and developing. Now he's injured. He'll be out for a few weeks. Sliding Minka Fitzpatrick in there would have been a great addition to the Cowboys. Now, it would have been back-to-back years. They would have had to trade their number one pick.
Right.
But you're talking about a young guy. Minka Fitzpatrick's in his second year. So I think you can give up a number one pick for a number one type talent who's in his second year.
Well, Dallas gave up a number one pick for Amari Cooper, and everyone kind of scoffed at that. And you know what? That turned Dak's season around, if you remember.
Yep.
And he's been a beautiful pickup, and he's a workhorse. He continues to get better. I don't even think we've seen the peak of Amari Cooper's career. And it's pretty phenomenal. So I credit Dallas for that. And under Stephen Jones, let's give him some credit. We always talk about Jerry and hear about Jerry. Ever since the 2012 draft, when Stephen Jones was emphatic about not taking Johnny Manziel, his dad wanted him. I am so impressed with what the Cowboys have done with their drafts and how they have managed this team. It's really, it's gotten them where they are right now.
Well, they built the team from the inside out. They went to the lines and then they got the skill positions, at least offensively. And when I look at the Cleveland Browns right now, I think they built it from the outside end. They have clearly invested in skill guys, Baker, Chubb, and the OBJ, the big one, right? Jarvis
Flashy.
Landry. A lot of flash there. But their offensive line is weak. And that's what gives me pause about the Cleveland Browns. A lot of flash, a lot of attention, a lot of big names, a lot of showboats. But if you don't have the O-line, the foundation to make that offense work, I think that's where you're going to have some troubles for the Cleveland Browns.
No, it's very true. And speaking of the Browns, I think who doesn't get a lot of talk there and who should, the best player on that entire roster, top to bottom, all 53, is Myles Garrett. Mm-hmm. 5 sacks.
Yep.
Monday night. Now, it is against the Jets, but nonetheless, 5 sacks.
Well, and when I talk about building a team from the inside, on the defensive side of the ball, they have really put some horses in. They've got some really great front guys. Their front seven's quite strong. I mean, they're really a better team defensively than I think they get credit for because of all the attention devoted to those offensive stars.
Right. That demand the attention.
So Texans on the road going to play the Chargers. Chargers are beat up. Both safeties are out. And Deshaun Watson ought to have some fun with that. Derwin James, the big loss for the Chargers defense. Are you feeling good for your Texans facing the Chargers?
No, I'm not. Because the Chargers have Phillip Rivers, who is very experienced, very calm. Now, if it comes down to a game of the leg, if it's a kicking game, poor Chargers. I mean, they really do have. I think they could be missing 5 to 7 starters this weekend.
Yeah.
But I have not seen enough consistency with the Texans. Deshaun had an unbelievable game against New Orleans, a really subpar game for him against Jacksonville, was still able to pull it out. I don't know. I think I just need to see the O-line just picking. Now, there's been an improvement from week one to week two.
Yeah, and they ran the ball pretty well.
They're running the ball beautifully. Carlos Hyde, what a great pickup.
Yeah.
And what a happy thing for him. He is leading he's the fifth leading rusher in the NFL right now, behind a really stout list of guys. So I'm really happy for him. He's a downhill guy. He's physical. He wants that tackle. I mean, he wants to break those tackles. I love it. But I do need to see some consistency, better pass protection, better pass rush, you know, until I feel really good about the Texans. They're going on the road to San Diego to the soccer stadium. So there we go.
I'm always surprised. You look at the odds for this weekend's games.
Ron loves the Chargers.
Ron loves the Chargers. Ron, do you have a case for the Chargers over the Texans?
No. I wish I could. I wish I could sit here and just feel so warm and fuzzy about my Chargers that it would just, you know, it would be an easy game. I'll tell you this. I don't even know. I keep saying this over and over again about my Chargers. I don't even know if they're going to have a home game this weekend. And I mean, Houston doesn't have a whole lot of fans abroad because they're still a young team.
Right.
But I still think
You can't fill a soccer stadium. It's a problem.
Yeah. I still think there might be more Texan fans than Charger fans there.
Wow.
And I just don't have a whole lot of faith in them yet. I never do until ever.
This is speaking from a lifelong Chargers fan. Believe me, I feel you being a lifelong Raiders fan. I know. You learn to live with the bumps.
There are some bumps.
There are some bumps.
All right, when we come back, we're going to take a look at what might be the best division in the NFL this upcoming season. You're listening to First and 10 on SB Nation Radio.
Listening to First and 10 on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Bob Evans and Blue Emu. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, so early to make such predictions. However, right now, the division with the most wins is the NFC West, thanks to what's happening with the Seahawks and the 49ers and the Rams, all undefeated thus far. They are the ones that have taken the most wins. Are you convinced? Are you impressed?
No.
Who's your best division?
My best division is the NFC North. You've got Green Bay, who Aaron Rodgers hasn't even gotten to his form yet, but that defense has been unbelievable.
Yep.
Detroit, looking much better than I thought. Minnesota's in there, and despite Kirk Cousins, they're 1-1, and I love Mike Zimmer's defense. And Chicago, I mean, I'm not a Mitchell Trubisky, but that defense, I can't say
enough
about
defense.
It. And they found their bugaboo in kicking. They've got Eddie Pinheiro. So
well, their defense keeps them in every game, and then Eddie Money can finish it off.
But yeah, exactly. Look at this in the West, though. San Francisco's 2-0 start.
Yeah.
While it is impressive, it hasn't been against stout opponents. You look at Seattle, who's also off to a 2-0 start. How legit is Seattle when they played Cincinnati without A.J. Green, Pittsburgh without Ben Roethlisberger? They lost him early. And now they're going to get New Orleans minus Drew Brees.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not legit to me yet. Who do you like?
I believe you. I agree. I like the NFC North. And don't sleep on the Buffalo Bills with the AFC East. We got both the Patriots and the Bills undefeated. Different topic. Actually, when you look at the Patriots and you think about what we've talked about in the past, there may be more stratification this year, a little bit less parity. In this sense, there are a few elite teams, and then there are some teams. And I think you see that in Vegas' odds this week. There are two matchups where the point spreads are more than 20 points. Mm. It's the Patriots over the Jets, Cowboys over the Dolphins. And those are really, I mean, 20-plus points in the NFL is a big-time spread. Nearly always goes in favor of the team that has the points. But we'll see. Patriots over the Jets, a great matchup. Tom Brady against Luke Falk. You like that matchup.
Okay, maybe this is what Vegas has not taken into account. Both Tom Brady and Luke Falk have something very big in common.
Yes.
They were both the 199th pick of their NFL draft.
In the penthouse of the draft.
So Luke has got some big shoes to fill.
Big shoes to fill. Go Luke Falk. I hope he does well. All right. You've been listening to First and 10. We look forward to Jaguars Titans. Your final pick for tonight's game.
I've got Titans.
It's Jaguars at home for me.
Okay. I love it.
All right. We shall
see. All right. Here we go. Week 3. Woo.
You're listening to First and 10, SB Nation Radio.